I'm Afshan Ratansi. Welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the UAE. You wait thousands of years for a peace deal, and then two come within a few weeks of each other. After the Saudi Arabia-Iran deal came Xi Jinping's state visit to Moscow, where Putin said mutual relations were more than an alliance. So now, could a Communist Party-brokered peace deal end Washington's war on Russia through Ukraine? Or will the export of British depleted uranium to Kiev and Antony Blinken's warnings against a ceasefire continue the war to the last Ukrainian as Russia and China hail their friendship and relations that have reached their highest point in history? I'm joined now from the city that gives its name to a possible rival to NATO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, by Emeritus Professor of International History and Politics at the Geneva Graduate Institute and Distinguished Fellow at the International Peace and Security Think Tank, the Stimson Center, Professor Zhang Langxin. Thank you so much, Professor, for coming on. I thought Zhuan Lai said, I think it's apocryphal, that it was too early to tell as regards the French Revolution. What's going on? China organizing Saudi-Iran diplomatic deals and then a visit to Moscow. Huge change.
Yes, yes. I think this is long in the making, first of all. I think the basic idea behind it as a strategic concept is that United States, particularly, I'm talking about United States, but Europe, to some extent, has identified China being systemic rival, or, you know, kind of Cold War language, and basically thinking about China these days, the last few years, as a pure zero-sum game. Anywhere, any place, anytime China gains something will be their loss. Now, China find a wonderful way of trying to have a breakthrough. You know, breakthrough meaning not just the actual the peacemaking effort, but also they try to affect public opinion in the world about China's role in regional security issues. They cannot deal with the United States anymore. Be honest, on Taiwan question, on other question, pretty much gave up, if I'm not exaggerating. So they say we can move around.
Well, you mentioned reputation there. You mentioned reputation. Yeah, yeah. Of course, the United States has an amazing, arguable propaganda department. I mean, CGTN is banned in NATO nations. In Britain, it's banned. Sure. I'm sure you'll have watched with amazement as every U.S. network, as if in a totalitarian state, covered the Chinese spy balloon as multi-million-dollar missiles were sent to destroy it. Surely its reputation of China in NATO countries, in the European Union and in the United States, is an all-time low.
Well, that's true. But remember, the U.S. mentality is something very close to early 1950s. It's kind of hysterical, I must say. It's kind of panic. Where the panic come from, I believe, is a deadly combination of two historical trends of thinking popular in the West. Now they combine together whenever they think about China. One is the fear of decline. Now, remember this whole Spengler, philosophy about the decline of the West, and United States in particular being number one for so long, suddenly facing the possibility of decline. So declinism or Spenglerism, then combined with a racial concept which has been popular in late 19th century, that is yellow peril. So these two things joined together really frightens the American foreign policy elite.
And
they think it's a real challenge, but they never use the language I said what they tried to do. But they disguise Spenglerism and the yellow peril sentiment with ideological, you know, autocracy versus democracy, a typical Cold War tactic. So it's not even sincere.
But surely those policymakers in Washington realize that the components of all their technology come from China, the treasury bills, the bond holding. Okay, it's reduced by China, but China still has huge investments. China could pull the rug under the United States economy tomorrow. Surely they understand that.
Well, the question is why China want to pull the rug. China would love to free ride post-1948 Bretton Woods or whatever system American created as long as they can. But sadly, they just cut short. Now, tech war is at the core. But don't forget, Oswald Spengler is the first person cry wolf in the 1930s. Last book, nobody reads it anymore, about technology. He said, never let slaves, remember the Hegelian language, master-slave relationship, never let slaves to own technology. They will destroy master's economy. So it's nothing really new. For me, it's just a history in a repetition. So it's been there for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, not sure if you know about how F. Scott Fitzgerald used the Great Gatsby about Spengler, that he was a bit of a fan of his. And we know what happened to Jay Gatsby. Why does China then... If it knows this, if it knows these racist tropes are being used against them, why does China continue to, say, facilitate Sri Lanka's IMF loan in the past few days rather than through BRICS? Why is it, I think it's given $500 billion to Pakistan, $500 million to facilitate IMF spending there. Why does China seem to continue to support the Bretton Woods institutions, actually?
Well, they try to support the result of Bretton Woods, which is called globalization, free trade. Remember, China is the last defender almost today that still try to defend free trade. Xi Jinping's speech at Davos a couple of years ago, you know, I never thought I would see that in my lifetime, Chinese communist leader as a leading champion of free trade. And the globalization. It is U.S., don't forget, the original founder of the Bretton Woods system that abandoned the system twice. Now, the first time they abandoned the gold exchange relationship, which is a default on the world. Now it's the second one that abandoned globalization. So blaming China for that economic problem, it's kind of put a horse before the cart. I don't think, even logically, it does not make sense.
Yeah, but many around the world believe the Davos system is predicated on a lie, that it's actually hypocrisy that reigns under Klaus Schwab's institution. And how long will the Chinese Communist Party continue, given the sanctions regime that prevents this dream utopia globalization that is always spoken of in Davos? It was only the other day Widodo of Indonesia said, beware of using MasterCard and Visa.
Well, remember... sanction regime was revived actively precisely because the U.S. want to abandon the original system, original world order, economic order in particular. Now, what China can do? Because China has been free riding for so long. Therefore, sanctions will hurt China quite a lot. But China tried very, very hard last year. I will say start 10 years ago at least. Russian probably start even earlier. De-dollarization is one, you know, concept. Well, Russians have done wonderfully, by the way. The sanction did not destroy ruble. That's the price to everybody in the West. China will move in the same direction eventually. They are selling massively the U.S. Debt and eventually will make RMB, you know, the more... important international currency. So they are preparing for the worst. At this moment, sanctions still working out to be able to damage Chinese economy. But Chinese are, well, they, you know, they take their glove off now, so to speak. Let's roll, you know, let's fight if you want to. Because the United States suffered quite a lot as well with these sanctions.
Well, not those who have shares in arms companies, arguably. China, obviously.
Okay. You're right. You're right. Arms companies are the only one. Yes.
China has great relations. China has great relations with Saudi Arabia. We've had people on this show say, look, this talk of de-dollarization, it's still in the interest of OPEC countries to keep the dollar rather than start trading in, say, the renminbi or yuan, because in a sense, the Chinese currency is kind of pegged to the US dollar anyway, so why bother changing things?
Well, it's just a question of survival, the question of avoiding the what Chinese language would call long arm punishment of other countries, meaning sanctions. It's a long arm, right? Intergovernmental. Now, the whole point about this is, I think, China tried to play or try to get in more into the IMF system, which is the, you know, the Bretton Woods legacy. If they cannot, the only option is to reduce the usage of dollar. Now, whether or not the dollar can continue to be as strong as it looks, I doubt. Many economists doubt, many historians doubt. Dollar probably going to implode by itself with this debt problem. You know, in how much money they printed in the last few years. So it's, you know, they will, I would say, American government will pay the price for a dollar implosion next few years.
But given the disparity of wealth in the United States, can the American government, the United States government, can they can go on raising interest rates to protect the dollar regardless of the poverty and the destruction of infrastructure and investment in American industry, the American carnage was spoken about?
Be honest, I doubt. Ronald Reagan or the Reaganomics tried it. Remember those days that they can raise as high as 15%. Now, raising interest rates based on the idea you can attract what those days in Reagan time, hot money, massively hot money into the United States. Because these hot money, talking about the oil shakes or everybody else, right, because they want to make money out of the interest difference, right? Which what you refer to is the sustained dollar strength. Not anymore. My sense is because fundamentals of the U.S. financial system, banking system, government finance is totally flawed, despite whatever government tried to pull in. You know, they are reaching a kind of, I believe, inelastic conditions now with this dollar. So I doubt they can play Reaganomics one more time. I just don't see it.
Professor Zhang Langjin, I'll stop you there. More after this break.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Professor Zhang Langjin, Chinese international relations scholar and distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center. I know you say it was a long time coming, but do you think the Chinese Communist Party was watching the defeat in Afghanistan as well as the the reaction by Russia to concerted bombing of Donbass. Are these two factors the catalysts for this, what looks like dramatic foreign policy initiatives by Xi Jinping?
Sure. Yeah. Well, yes, I will say so. Yes. They really had a certain sense. You can say Schadenfreude, where they see how chaotic United States repeat the Saigon retreat after so many years, which they then of course the Russian invasion. I know Chinese government never used that word. I, as a scholar, I will use that word. It is the invasion, which certainly is not abide by international law. But don't forget, again, China always sees NATO enlargements as a threat, not only to Russia. China also felt the pressure when NATO start eastward expansion in 1997-98. Nobody remembered that episode, how China reacted. China almost panicked at the time.
Yeah, but all China did when the former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan was to do a big drill. I mean, you know, some people were asking, why doesn't China, I don't know, Xi Jinping visit Havana? Visit Havana or do something more than just a big military drill in response? Right.
No, I don't think the timing is right. But don't forget, this drill is not all the other drill. It's a different drill. This is called the blockading strategy. This could be one of the future actual military operation plan. This is actually provide an opportunity for them to really, a real fire exercise surrounding Taiwan. Don't forget, this is the first time. This blockade could be one of the plans, you see.
Well, I mean, certainly on Fox News, they talk like that. Right. But of course, the Americans have lots. They have lots of personnel, apart from all the bases that circle you in Shanghai, the U.S. bases.
Yeah.
16 Chinese workers killed in the Central African Republic, just ahead of the Xi visit to Moscow. China has a lot of infrastructure that could be bombed. We know that Cy Hirsch revealed the destruction, perhaps the greatest infrastructure terror act in all history, the Nord Stream pipeline supplying energy to Europe. Surely China is very vulnerable in Latin America and Africa and Southeast Asia to any kind of CIA Nord Stream style attack.
That's possible. That's always possible, depending on how much tension will develop between U.S. and China. Let's say if China started military operation against Taiwan, will United States really do a full-scale warfare with China? I doubt it, really, despite Biden's four infamous tongue slips as we would do it. I don't think U.S. military is ready. U.S., the overall strategy and even military deployment are ready. The only thing, with allies, something called Quad. But the Quad is really at a rather primitive stage. I don't believe they're reaching the level of so-called interoperability to coordinate a war on behalf of Taiwan.
You think President Tsai, they were talking about that when President Tsai visiting the United States, apparently just in transit on a Central American tour?
Sure.
Are they actively discussing this?
Yes, it's a huge issue. This is another major provocation. Remember, it's not just transit, it's a who. The question, who is going to see her? Okay. If you have Anthony Blinken,
Well, nothing will be in public, will it? It won't be in public.
The U.S. system, they're never able to keep secrets, don't forget. So I'm sure it's going to be public. If at the level Anthony Blinken, that's a major, major provocative. Kevin McCarthy, yes, it's a major one, but that's even one ladder below Nancy Pelosi in terms of provocation, because Nancy Pelosi the same party with the Democrat, right? It's the same Democrat government. And McCarthy is the opposition party.
McCarthy, of course, won't go and see Zelensky, and who's being attacked in NATO nation media. What about Japan?
Right.
What about, I mean, we've seen a Biden expansionism in the Philippines. You're saying, you don't think Biden is going to go for it. We've seen it in the Philippines. Fumio Kishida in Kiev. Major. What's that? What is that about as the IMF organizes a $15.6 billion deal, which presumably China must have known about because China invests in the IMF?
Sure. Yeah, but the deal is not for military reasons, right? IMF will never give that deal for military reasons. Japan and others, or Philippines, the base, right? The recently opened a few base. These are all part of what American called Indo-Pacific strategy. I know that. I followed very closely. Don't forget, I say it, it's still at relatively primitive stage. They are trying to form a strategic encirclement or containment, military containment against China. Fine. This, it's a slow in motion, but it's there. But I doubt this is really very useful vis-a-vis the Taiwan issue. It does not help. It does not help stabilize the Taiwan Strait at all. Because that could, militarily, if you are sitting in Beijing, I'm the commander in chief. Do I have to wait until watching you slowly to finish your deployment?
That's what they've been doing the past 20 years.
The last few years, they really speak up. In the 20 years, they don't have a quad, they don't have all the other stuff. Or AUKUS, with the UK. So what I'm trying to say is we cannot watch you to do it because we have convinced this is what you're going to do to make Taiwan a separate political entity forever. That is the Chinese calculation, okay? Despite the U.S. Rhetoric, we never change one China policy. They don't even believe they are not changing it, not to mention Chinese. There is zero serious communication on Taiwan question now. I mean, they talk completely different language.
Yeah, looking both ways is something that perhaps was shown from the ICC arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin issued on the eve of the visit by Xi Jinping to Moscow, because, of course, the U.S. say they would invade Holland if...
Good propaganda value, for sure,
If we can dispense with the ICC, then what about the weaponization of human rights? Because, as you know, and given that you teach in the United States, you must have been aware of the propaganda campaign actually showed on this program how the Uyghur propaganda story was amplified. Do you expect the weaponization of human rights to go on steroids? I should say Karim Khan, the ICC lawyer, has been on this show. Should we expect more and more stories saying that where you live, where you're speaking to me from, Shanghai, is a cesspit of human rights violations?
China always have, we know China has very serious human rights problems. It's the Uyghur issue in Xinjiang really qualified as American defied as a genocide. That's a nonsense. I don't agree. Now, do I think that the policy itself is wise? Not really either. I will say I would criticize both sides, but who is weaponizing human rights? That's my question here. Mainly the Western part of the world. That's my sense. Now become a major instrument for great power diplomacy. Remember, during the original Cold War, there is a human rights issue, Helsinki agreement, all that. You never hear the American leaders constantly using Chinese Communist Party instead of People's Republic of China.
arguably, the Global South doesn't care anymore. The Global South knows about Abu Ghraib and the prison on Guantanamo that's still open. So, arguably, that kind of...
But, yeah,
element.
Well, the idea, the very idea, is trying to separate Communist Party from PRC itself, it's not historical. They don't know what they're talking about. B, it's not realistic in any case. This is invented by people like Pompeo, don't forget. Very much so. It's become a common language now. US leaders are using, some European politicians use. It's absurd to using human rights issue as a major instrument for great power politics. Remember, I emphasize great power politics. Great power politics, you need to be pragmatic. You disagree with ideology, regimes, you know, character, fine. But let's sit down to make a deal. See, the ultimate issue is peace or war. This is something many forgot. Europeans certainly these days are not aware the damage they have done to jump on American unilateral interpretation of Taiwan issue. Because remember, there was always a two-sides interpretation. If you follow the history of the Taiwan questions, since Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. Okay.
Well, if the United States is declining, will Europe die before the United States as a powerhouse of the economy? I mean, I should say Europe is paying for this Russian war. It's still buying Russian energy.
That's sure.
And obviously China is paying for the war by bypassing the sanctions. I don't know whether China will send weapons. Yeah. Do you think China will send weapons to Russia?
I don't think they will send straightforward, no.
I don't think Russia needs it, according to Russia.
Dual use. No. Remember, it's always possibility for dual use. Right? So, how can you define dual use as a sending weapons to the Russians? So dual use is always possible. It's according to the bilateral treaties, the trade treaty between China and Russia. We continue to do that.
Do you expect closer nuclear weapons cooperation? Already American think tanks are alarmed by the fact Rosatom and China are talking about close cooperation over nuclear weapons.
They're alarmed. Remember, before they asked China, let's have a nuclear talk. Now, today, the situation, as I said, is into a period of McCarthy's, almost like a McCarthy period. It's a black-white zero sum. Any proposal made by China, they have to say, what's the conspiracy behind it? You know, what's driving that? I don't know why. I'm currently with Harvard Belfer Center, Kennedy School, in a nuclear program. If you want to refer to that, I'm very happy because I'm still a research fellow there. We are working on that. I'm the one trying to do track two, you know, if we cannot do track one, let's talk about nuclear issues. But so far, American side are less, they changed their attitude. Before, they pushed China. So we are really in the situation where communication become almost impossible. It's dangerous for great power relations.
Professor Zhang Langjing, thank you. And that's it for the show. Remember, we'll be bringing you brand new episodes every Saturday and Monday, so stay tuned. Meanwhile, you can keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.